Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part 2 Faculty of Social Science. Now, I am going to record the next poet of the poetry, Matthew Arnold. Introduction. Matthew Arnold has been regarded as one of the greatest poets of Victorian era. As he writes himself, it might be fairly urged that I have less poetical sentiment than Tennyson and less intellectual vigor and abundance than Browning. Yet, because I have perhaps more of a union of the two than either of them, I am likely to have my turn as they had theirs. This was a sound judgment and leads us to remember that apart from being a great poet, Arnold had equal claim to fame as a literary critic. Life and Works. Matthew Arnold was born on September 24, 1822, near Staines. He was the eldest son of the Dr. Arnold of Rugby. He got education at Winchester Rugby and Balliol College, Oxford. He won the New Digest Prize in 1844 at Balliol. The same year he got his degree and went to Oriel. Here he was elected a fellow in 1885. He did various jobs in 1877. He was elected private secretary to the Marquess of Lansdowne. After some time he became an inspector of elementary schools. He did his job sincerely and earned a great deal of reputation. In the year 1857, he became the professor of poetry at Oxford. He held on to this job for some time. In 1883, he received a pension of the pound 250 a year. He died at Liverpool in April 1888. An estimate of his philosophy has been given by Crompton and Rickett in the following words. A great, slight, delicate-looking man with a great touch of superciliousness in his pleasant, cultured voice, through nothing but graciousness in his manner, a presence that seemed to breathe a refined, scholarly atmosphere, unlike many poets who pass through one or other of the universities. Arnold was the personification of choice, academic tradition, Oxford, insulted of his happiest verse. His works: Empedocles on Etna and Other Poems, Sohrab and Rustam, Merope, Poems by Matthew Arnold, New Poem, The Scholar, Gypsy, Thyrsis, Dover Beach, etc., and some finest elegies. As a great poet of elegies, an elegy is an expression of mourning. It may be two kinds: personal elegy, in which the poet laments the death of some close friend or relative. Second, impersonal elegy, in which the poet grieves over human destiny or over some aspects of contemporary life and literature. In this way, we get his philosophy of life and death. Matthew Arnold is mainly a writer of personal expression of grief, but he also philosophizes over the fate of humanity in general. Rugby Chapel, for example, is a personal elegy in which the poet mourns the death of his father. It shows Arnold's elegiac genius at its best. He begins with the memory of his father who died 15 years earlier. The mainstream of Arnold's thinking is on, and he goes on to philosophize on, the sadness of human destiny. Man's lot in this world is lonely, helpless, and hopeless. Most men eddy about here and there, eat and drink, are raised aloft, are hurled in the dust, striving blindly, achieving nothing, and then they die, perish. His love of nature. Matthew Arnold loves nature and is her keen observer. In this scene, he follows Wordsworth. He has Wordsworth's calm, but neither his cheerfulness nor his detachment. All the same, he can render various scenes of nature in powerful and fine words. Here is a picture of the calm sea by night. The sea is calm tonight. The tide is foul. The motion lies fair. Upon the strains on the French coast, the light gleams and is gone. The cliffs of England stand glimmering and washed out in the tranquil way. Arnold has also the awareness of the fierce aspect of nature. In portraying the fierceness of nature, he is unique and one of the few English poets who have been able to do it successfully. Consider the following lines. Thunder crashes from rock to rock. The cataracts reply lightning. Dazzle our eyes. Roaring torrents have breached the track. The stream bed descends in the place where the wayfarer once planted his footstep. Sense of detachment. The poetry of Matthew Arnold is marked by gracious persuasiveness and gentle detachment. In the words of Crompton and Rickett, there is suavity rather than passion in his poetry. He will never be a favorite with the ardent, impetuous temperaments. He is too severe, too chill for the sensitive emotion of youth. He is fierce and scornful like Byron, even in his mood of opposition. But he is courteously hostile, ironical, often satirical, rarely. The suavity of Arnold is at its happiest in The Scholar, Gypsy, and Thyrsis, which rank among his best achievements. Style and diction. Arnold's style was molded by his reading and admiration for classical literature. He is simple and lucid. He is classical by reason of the exquisite harmony of tone. He measured fitness, the sweet reasonableness, the Virgilian dignity, the unerring urbanity, and liquid clearness of his style. Thus, Matthew Arnold is one of the most important poets of English. His greatness can be summed up in a sonnet by Acharya Satyasri. Weep for Arnold, for he weeps for word. He is an elegiac and sad poet. He mourns and mourns for what he has heard, how the poor are crushed and killed by bullet. A sense of stoicism is in Matthew Arnold, yet he has hope and faith in natural sight. The suavity and sonority have molded with religious spirit for divine light. How simple, how lucid, how great harmony. The diction and style both have full honey, and his fastidious workmanship is keen. Arnold is great to look at the reality. His poetry build up his personality. Now, the first poem of the Matthew Arnold is Shakespeare. First of all, summary in English. In the present sonnet, Shakespeare, the poet, Matthew Arnold presents a very vivid and organic description of the greatest dramatist of organic literature, English literature. Here the poet says that if we ask questions about other literarists, we get answers easily. But our great Shakespeare is beyond all the questions. It means we can know more or less about the other poets and writers after reading their literature, but one cannot learn Shakespeare's life and object only by reading his literature. The poet further says, Whenever anyone asks a question, he merely smiles like that man whose secrecy is difficult to know. Shakespeare is all beyond our knowledge. Such a type of mountain has its height place in the sky. His thought is too deep to know for an ordinary reader. No scholar can learn and understand Shakespeare easily. In the last six lines, the poet gives his imaginative flight. Shakespeare was self-educated. He did not go to any college and university. Whatever greatness he has achieved, he gets all by his own sacrifice. His greatness will never be forgotten. It will preserve forever and ever. To him, it is good that Shakespeare is very secret to us. His secrecy makes us pleased ever. The every pain of the world has been fizzed by men. All those weaknesses makes us weak, and all those troubles by which we have been pressed have been well described in the literature of Shakespeare. हिंदी सारांश. प्रस्तुत सॉनेट के अंतर्गत कवि मैथ्यू अर्नॉल्ड शेक्सपियर के बारे में बड़ी ही सजीवता के साथ वर्णन किया है, जो अंग्रेजी साहित्य का महानतम नाटककार के बारे में बड़ी ही सजीवता के साथ वर्णन बड़ी नाटककार था. यहाँ कवि कहता है कि यदि हम दूसरे साहित्यकारों के बारे में पूछते हैं तो उत्तर तत्काल प्राप्त हो जाता है, किंतु हमारा महान शेक्सपियर हर प्रकार के प्रश्नों से बाहर है. इसका अर्थ है कि हम अन्य कवि साहित्यकार के बारे में थोड़ा बहुत तत्काल जान लेते हैं, किंतु हम शेक्सपियर के बारे में अथवा उसके उद्देश्यों के बारे में उसके साहित्य को भी पढ़कर नहीं जान पाते. कवि आगे कहता है कि जब कभी कोई एक प्रश्न पूछता है, वह मात्र वैसे ही हंसता है जिसका रहस्य जानना कठिन होता है. शेक्सपियर हमारी ज्ञान शक्ति के बहुत ही ऊपर है. वह ऐसा पर्वत है जो आकाश को स्पर्श करता है. उसके विचार बहुत ही गहरे हैं सामान्य पाठक के लिए. कोई भी शोधकर्ता शेक्सपियर को शीघ्र सरलता से नहीं समझ सकता. अंतिम छह पंक्तियों में कवि उसके काल्पनिक उड़ान को प्रस्तुत करता है. शेक्सपियर स्वयं शिक्षित था. वह किसी कॉलेज अथवा विश्वविद्यालय में नहीं गया था. जो कुछ महानता उसने प्राप्त की थी, उसने सब कुछ अपने त्याग से प्राप्त किया था. उसकी महानता कभी भी भुलाई नहीं जा सकती, यह हमेशा सुरक्षित रहेगा. उसके अनुसार शेक्सपियर हमारे लिए सदा रहस्यपूर्ण रहा है. उसकी रहस्यात्मकता हमें हमेशा सदा आनंद प्रदान करती है. संसार के समस्त दुख मनुष्य द्वारा सहे जाते हैं. हमारी कमजोरियां हमें कमजोर करती हैं. वे सभी समस्याएं जो हमें दबाए रखती हैं, शेक्सपियर के साहित्य में अच्छे प्रकार से वर्णित है. नाउ द एप्रिसिएशन ऑफ द पोएम शेक्सपियर. First of all, introduction. The present poem Shakespeare has been presented and published by Matthew Arnold in 1849. The poet presents a glowing tribute to Shakespeare. According to him, Shakespeare is so great and rich, so complete that it is very difficult to understand him. The present sonnet, Shakespeare, is no doubt one of the finest poems of art and has a great place in English literature. Theme and thought of the poem. Shakespeare is great for he never presents himself as a character, neither in his dramas nor in his poetry. As the greatest critics of modern age, T.S. Eliot, says that the focus attention should be on poetry or piece of work of art, and not the poet. By this theory, Shakespeare stands first. The objectivity of his subject matter is no doubt superb. After reading his plays, it is difficult to deduce anything about his personal thinking or his personal perfection. preferences or aversions from the writings are so objective that he is also beyond the form of his writings. He is also beyond the reach of all knowledge. The poet rightly remarks, "Others abide our questions. Thou art free, we ask and ask, thou smilest, and art still out-topping knowledge." A born genius. According to Arnold, Shakespeare did not receive any formal education. He was self-educated. He was not born great, nor was greatness thrust on his writing, which are his best security against the objections. While Shakespeare lived, nobody knew that he would be the greatest genius of all time. Shakespeare has lofty imaginative flights and mastery of human passion, particularly sorrow and pains. He also has mastery of expression. All the pains immortal spirit must endure, all weakness which imparts, all griefs which bow, find their soul voice in victorious brew. Style and diction and imagery. The subject of the sonnet is great. The poet takes resource to grant an impressive imagery to present this subject. He compares the greatest dramatist and poet of the world to a lofty hill. The style of the poem is fully deductive and descriptive and narrative. Arnold uses simple diction, lucid and effective. The rhyming scheme of the poem is A, B, B, A, A, C, C, A, D, E, D, E, F, F. Now the explanations of the stanza with reference to the context. Now first stanza of the poem. Others abide our question. Thou art free, we ask and ask, thou smilest and art still, out-topping knowledge for the loftiest hill. Who to the stars uncrowns his majesty? Reference: these lines have been taken from the poem Shakespeare, composed by the well-known poet Matthew Arnold. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the greatest dramatist of the world in English literature. Here he presents a great tribute to Shakespeare. Explanation. Here Matthew Arnold expresses his great feeling about Shakespeare. We can make inquiries about other artists and know something about them, but Shakespeare is so detached and objective that it is difficult to know anything about him from his work. And yet people keep themselves busy in making inquiries about Shakespeare, who keeps smiling all the while. He is a person whose majesty is too deep to be proved. According to the poet, Shakespeare is beyond the reach of all knowledge. Now the next stanza of the poem. Planting his steadiest footsteps in the sea, making the heaven of heavens his dwelling place, spares but the cloudy border of his base to the foiled searching of mortality. In these particular lines, the poet Matthew Arnold expresses his idea about the objectivity of the great dramatist Shakespeare. According to him, it is too difficult to know Shakespeare's personality or personal attitude throughout his poetry. It is because of his detachments. Explanation. Here the poet says that Shakespeare touches the sky due to his literary qualities and greatness. He touches the stars. He is so high and divine that no person who is as high and divine as he can understand the majesty of his genius. People go on doing researches on him, though they do not get any appreciable result. The reason is that while Shakespeare, like the highest hill, lives in the highest regions of the sky, his feet are planted deep in the sea. So what The researchers get is only some outward knowledge about him and nothing more than that. Now, the last stanza of the poem. And though who didst the stars and sunbeams know? Self-schooled, self-honored, self-secure, didst tread on earth unguessed at, better so. All pains the immortal spirit must endure, all weakness which impairs, all griefs which bow, find their soul speech in that victorious brow. Reference will be same. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Matthew Arnold expresses his idea about the value, validity, and greatness of the great dramatist Shakespeare. According to him, he has no parallel. No one has so greatness. He has no competition. Here he describes Shakespeare's objectivity, the flight of his imagination, and his profound majesty. Explanation. Here the poet Matthew Arnold says that Shakespeare's head is high, that touches the sky and stars and the rays of the sun. He further says that the flights of Shakespeare's imagination are so high and to touch the very sky. This great dramatist poet of the world never went to any school. He was so obscure that he knew only himself. His works have earned honor for him. It is greatness which is his security against oblivion. When he lived, few could recognize how great a genius he was going to be. We love his fascination, which might never have decreased. The poet further writes that Shakespeare is great for his lofty thought. His imagination is mysterious. To him, the immortal spirit of man can endure various kinds of pain. It is painted by various kinds of weakness and sorrows of life. All these qualities can be found in the works of Shakespeare. Thank you. This is the end of the poem. Now, the next poem of the Matthew Arnold, A Summer Night. First of all, the summary of the poem. In the poem, A Summer Night, the poet Matthew Arnold expresses his idea about the melancholy individuals. According to him, the melancholy awareness is that most individuals are impotent to save themselves. They are caught in a brazen prison where they give their lives to some unmeaning task work. In the beginning of the poem, the poet presents his agony about the natural sights. He imagines how he was moving in the deserted moonlight, a street that was fully silent, the narrow street of space between house steps discloses the moon. A whole tract of heaven can be seen lost behind the moon, fading dimly into the dewy dark obscurity down at the rim of the distant horizon. He further says that most men live in a brazen prison where they toil under the hot sun, giving their lives to doing some unmeaning works. With all their strength, they are not capable of dreaming anything beyond their prison walls. As year after year, fresh product of their barren labor falls from their tired hand and rest still never comes nearer. Gloom settles, which oppresses them, and death researches them in their prison. Without being freed from their self-imposed yoke, having nothing and without receiving the blessing of God. He further says that there are people who have escaped from their prison and reached the void ocean of life to launch their new voyage, but they are misled in a wrong direction and they have been wrecked. Anyhow, one or two reach their destination, yet they do not get their fulfillment. The poet further says that the roar of the worldly sea goes on and on day by day and becomes sterner. The poet asks, if there is no life except these only, is there no other choice for a man except becoming a madman or a slave? Lastly, the poet addressing heaven says that there remains a world above man's head to let him see how boundless can be his soul's horizon, how vast, yet how transparent and clear, and the heaven, how it has been good to abide there and breathe freely. It is left to each man how much inspiration he should take from heavens to mold his own individual life. Hindi Sharans Prastut Kavita Summer Night ke antargat कवि मैथ्यू अर्नोल्ड अपने व्यक्तिगत दुख को प्रकट करता है। उसके अनुसार दुखांत जागृति को जगाने में अधिकांश व्यक्ति सामर्थ्यहीन होते हैं। वे अपने को मानते हैं कि वे एक कारागार में बंद हैं, जहां वे अपने जीवन निरर्थक व्यतीत कर रहे हैं। कविता के प्रारंभ में कवि अपनी वेदना को प्राकृतिक दृश्यों के प्रति प्रस्तुत करता है। वह कल्पना करता है कि वह पूर्णतया शांत रेगिस्तानी चंद्रमा के प्रकाश में भ्रमण करता है। पतले शकरे मार्ग चंद्रमा के प्रकाश से युक्त हैं और आकाश मंडलीय स्वर्ग को उसके माध्यम से देखा जा सकता है। जब तक कि चंद्रमा का प्रकाश धुंधला ना हो जाए, यह दशा क्षितिज तक देखी जा सकती है। वह आगे कहता है कि अधिकांश व्यक्ति सांसारिक जेल में बंद हैं, जहां वे जीवन के गर्म थपेड़ों को सह रहे हैं और व्यर्थ के कार्यों में संलग्न हैं। वे अपने सांसारिक कारागार की दीवारों के बाहर कुछ भी देखने में असमर्थ हैं। इसी प्रकार वे वर्षों वर्षों तक व्यर्थ का कार्य करते हुए अंततः स्वर्ग सिधार जाते हैं और उनका जीवन पूर्णतया निरर्थक हो जाता है। इस प्रकार वे ना तो जीवन में कुछ कर पाते हैं और ना ही ईश्वर को उन्हें आशीर्वाद ही प्राप्त हो पाता है। वह आगे प्रस्तुत करता है कि कुछ ऐसे भी लोग होते हैं जो सांसारिक बंधनों पर से भागकर विशाल समुद्र में तैरने का प्रयत्न करते हैं, किंतु वे भी अपनी यात्रा गलत दिशा में करने लगते हैं। इसी प्रकार से एक या दो लोग अपने गंतव्य स्थान तक पहुंच जाने में सफल हो जाते हैं, फिर भी वे अपने महानतम उद्देश्य तक नहीं पहुँच पाते। कवि आगे दर्शाते हैं कि सांसारिक जगत के शोर दिनों दिन बढ़ते जाते हैं और अधिक कठिन हो जाते हैं। ऐसी अवस्था मानव जीवन में कोई मार्ग नहीं रह जाता, वह या तो पागल हो जाता है या गुलाम बन जाता है। अंततः कवि ईश्वरीय जगत को संबोधित करता है और प्रार्थना करता है कि मानवीय जीवन के ऊपर भी एक दुनिया है, वह उसे देखे कि क्षितिज के बाहर क्या है, स्वर्ग कितना पारदर्शी और साफ है, वह मनुष्य कितना स्वतंत्र रह सकता है और मनुष्य उससे कितनी प्रेरणा ले सकता है और कितना अपने व्यक्तिगत जीवन को सुखद बना सकता है। Now, the description of the poem. In the poem, A Summer Night, the poet Matthew Arnold presents a very vivid and organic picture of human life. It is true that the life of a man is the supreme on the earth, yet he is surrounded by brazen prison and looks nothing for what the Almighty God has sent him on the earth. He leads a very mystical life. The very poem A Summer Night no doubt reveals the agony and melancholy of the poet's mind. To him, man is moving to and fro like a vagabond and doing nothing, losing his life in vain. In the beginning of the poem, the poet feels and says, in the deserted moon blanched street, how lonely rings the echo of my feet. Arnold's poetic temperament gets fully expressed in A Summer Night. In no other poem is so closely revealed the melancholy awareness that most individuals are impotent to save themselves. They are caught in the brazen prison of their own choice. Here they give their lives to some unmeaning task work. There are, of course, a few who manage to escape the prison, but they are also caught by the tempest which wreck their ships. As a result, they are lost in the storm. Their hopes of reaching an imaginary port never materializes. The philosophy of life is given by the poet later on. Presenting the philosophy, he writes, "And I know not if to pray, still to be what I am, or yield and be like all other men I see." Here the poet's existing attitude is that life is probably more satisfying, more desirable than the attitude of the most people. He still contemplates if it is desirable to be like others who, without understanding the meaning and purpose of life, claim sufficiency. Arnold further thinks that most people do not attempt to understand. They only live their life poorly. They cannot go beyond their own set ideas, about which the poet says they live in brazen prison. Some want to be free, some ran away, but not once gets his greatest destination. Lastly, the poet presents a very vivid picture and hopes and writes, "A word above man's head to let him see how boundless might his soul's horizons be, how vast, yet of what clear transparency, how it were good to abide there and breathe free, is left to each man still." He wants to say that the heaven remains a word above the man's head to let him see how boundless could be his soul's horizon, how vast, yet how transparent it is left to each man, how much inspiration he can take from heaven to mold his life. Now, style and diction. The poem A Summer Night is a remarkable poem so far as its style and diction is concerned. There is philosophy and psychology of human life. The poem has a teaching in itself. The style of descriptive and deductive. The style is descriptive and deductive and narrative. It is a kind of soliloquy. Here, the poet presents the secrecy of human life. The words are simple, lucid, and effective. They impact our mind. Thus, the diction has its validity. The poem is written in blank verse. So far as the figures are concerned, they are mostly alliteration, simile, metaphor, and personification, etc. Thus, the poem has its important place in the history of English poetic world. Now, the explanations of the stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. First stanza. In the deserted moon blank street, how lonely rings the echo of my feet. Those windows which I gaze at frown, silent and white, unopening down, repellent as the world. But see, a break between the house tops shows the moon, and lost behind her, fading dim into the dewy dark obscurity, down at the far horizon's rim, doth a whole tract of heaven discloses. And to my mind the thought is on a sudden brought, of a past night and a far different scene. Headlands stood out into the moonlit deep, as clearly as at noon the spring tide's brimming flow heaved dazzling between houses with long white sweep, girdled the glistening day behind through the soft air. The blue haze cradled mountains spread away. The night was far more fair, but the same restless pacings to and fro, and the same vanity throbbing heart was there, and the same bright calm moon. Reference: these lines have been taken from the poem A Summer Night, composed by the well-known poet Matthew Arnold. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the life of human beings. According to him, the life of man is full of agony and pain, yet the heavenly word has its full significance. Here he describes the moon night and her effects. Explanation: First of all, the poet describes the echo of his feet in the deserted moonlit street. The sound of his feet is very lonely because he was all alone. The silent and wide windows with their shutters unopened downwards are as unattractive to the poet as the world around him. No wonder, whenever he gazes at them, he frowns. The narrow stretch of space between house steps discloses the moon. A whole tract of heaven can be seen lost behind the moon, fading dimly into the dewy dark obscurity down at the rim of the distant horizon. Suddenly, the poet is reminded of the sad incidents of a past scene. The night when the poet's brother died was fairer than the night he describes now. At that night, the moon was so clearly spread that night that the headlands stood out into the moonlit deep as clearly as the moon. The spring tide with brimming flow heaved, dazzling in the moon, its lit night. The houses with long white sweep girdled the glistening bay. Behind the houses, the hazy mountains spread away. But the poet experienced the same restless throbbing of his heart, the same restless facing to and fro is now also experiencing. Now, the next stanza of the poem. And the calm moonlight seems to say, hast thou then still the old unquiet breast, which neither deadens into rest, nor ever feels the fiery glow that wills the spirit from itself away, but fluctuates to and fro, never by passion quite possessed, and never quite benumbed by the world's sway, and I know not if to pray, still to be what I am, or yield and be, like all the other men I see. For most men in a prison live, wherein the sun's hot eye, with heads bent over their toil, their languidly their lives to some unremaining task work, give, dreaming of not beyond their prison wall, and as year after year, fresh products of their barren labor fall from their tired hands and rest. Ever yet comes more near, gloom settles slowly down over their breast, and while they try to stem the waves of mournful thought by which they are pressed, death in their prison reaches them, unfreed, having seen nothing, still unblessed. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the melancholy and pain of the human beings. According to him, there is darkness everywhere and a man is tossing in that. He does not know how to cross the worldly sea. There is none who can save him. Now, explanation. Here the poet says that the calm moonlight seems to ask the poet who never takes rest, which never feels the fiery glow which wills away the spirit from itself, but fluctuates to and fro, which is never under control by passion, and which is never benumbed by the illusion of the people of the world. Most men live in unmeaning life. They are like prisoners in the brazen prison of their own idea about life. They toil hard, the sun dreaming nothing beyond the prison of their own making. The poet further says that there are a few who escape the prison. They choose to adopt independent line of action in life. In the vast ocean of life, they sail in whatever direction their heart desires. They are not aware of the trade winds which cross the ocean from eternity, which may bring dangers. Now the next stanza of the poem. And the rest a few escape their prison and depart on the wide ocean of life anew. They are the freed prisoner wherever his heart listeneth will sail. Nor doth he know how there prevailed this poetic on that sea. Trade winds which cross it from eternity, a while he holds some false way undeterred by thwarting signs and braves the freshening winds and blackening waves, and then the tempest strikes him, and between the lightning bursts is seen only a driving wreck, and the pale master on his spare stern deck, with anguished face and flying hair, grasping the rudder hard, still bent to make some port he knows not where, still standing for some false impossible shore. And sterner comes the roar of sea and wind, and through the deepening gloom, fainter and fainter, wreck and helmsman loom, and he too disappears and comes no more. Is there no life but these alone? Madman or slave, must man be one? Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Matthew Arnold expresses his idea about the philosophy of life. According to him, the man does many vain works in his life, yet there are many persons who run away from the worldly chains and try to get some super life, but they do not get that because that place is not also free from danger. Now, explanation. Here the poet says that there are many men who anyhow cross the worldly ocean or try to escape from their prison. Such types of men try to adopt an independent line of action in life. In the vast ocean of life, they sail in whatever direction their heart desires. They are not aware of trade winds which cross the ocean from eternity may bring dangers. Very soon he is misled and starts sailing in a wrong direction, not paying any heed to thwarting signs. He braves the freshening winds and blackening waves, and then the tempest strikes him. Between bursts of lightning is seen only the driving wreckage of a vessel, and the pale master of the vessel in hopeless condition. He is seen on his wrecked deck, with anguished face and flying hair. He grasps the rudder hard, still bent to reach some port he knows not where. He is still found stranding with vain hopes of reaching some impossible shore. Then the sea wind becomes stranger. The master, together with his wrecked ship, disappear for all time to come in the vast sea. The pocket further asks if there is not life except these only. Is there no other choice for a man except becoming a bad man or a slave? Now the last stanza of the poem. Plainness and clearness without shadow of stain, clearness divine, ye heavens whose pure dark regions have no sign, a languor touch tough so calm, and though so great are yet untroubled and unpassionate, who though so noble share in the world's toil, and though so tossed keep free from dust and soil. I will not say that your mild deeps retain a ting, it may be, of their silent pain, who have longed deeply once and longed in vain. But I will rather say that you remain a word above man's head, to let him see how boundless might his soul's horizons be, how vast, yet of what clear transparency, how it were good to abide there and breathe free, how fair a lot to fill is left to each man still. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the philosophy of life. According to him, The life of man is full of pain and agony. He moves from one place to another and does unmeaning works in his life. Sometimes he escapes from the worldly chain of life and wants to do something new, but he does not know where he should go, and thus he misleads his life and faces a great fall that proves a havoc to him. Now, explanation. Here the poet addresses heaven, which symbolizes plainness and clearness without any stain. The dark regions of heaven, which have no sign of loss of energy in spite of their greatness and calmness, are ever untroubled, and they never display any passion. Though they are so noble, and though they share in the world toil accomplishing it as an assigned duty, the heaven keeps themselves free from dust and soil. And he further says, the mild deeps of heaven do not retain a thing of pain, a sow sympathy for less of fulfillment of desire of man. The heaven remains a word above man's head. To see how boundless could be his soul's horizon, how vast, yet how transparent it is left to a man, how much inspiration he can take from heaven to mold his life. Thank you. This is the end of the poem.